Greatest Choice podcast, where we dive into the topics of singleness, fertility, motherhood, and choice. I'm your host, Katie B. Every episode, I'll deliver conversations with women in their fertile years who are grappling with what to do when life doesn't turn out as planned. You will also hear interviews with experts in the fields of fertility, personal development, choosing single motherhood, and more. Join us as we explore these topics and support each other along the way. Because what you decide to do with these years could be the single greatest choice you'll ever make, and you don't have to make it alone. Hello and welcome back. This week's guest is someone that many of you may know from Instagram, and if you don't, you're going to want to follow her work and her story after hearing this interview. Ravid is an infertility warrior, a single mother by choice, and the creator of the MB app. MB is the only tracking app made exclusively for women who are going through IVF and IUI cycles. It allows women to enter their protocols, get reminders, track results, and gain valuable insights by comparing their results to cycles of other women with similar diagnoses. The MB app arose from Ravid's own journey to conception through IVF. Her story is an interesting and inspiring one, and I know you'll enjoy it. So please listen along and follow Ravid at MB2Baby. That's MBEMBIE, the number 2, baby. Enjoy the show. Hi, Ravid. Welcome to The Single Greatest Choice.
Hey, Katie. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so happy to have you today. You are someone that I sought out on Instagram because I've been watching your story unfold and watching what you're doing. And I'm very excited to have you share both personally and professionally how this topic connects to you. So if you'll just start out by telling us a little bit about you.
I am from the U.S., but actually moved abroad to Israel, where I'm originally from, but I haven't lived here since I was 8 years old, and came here because of this journey that I'm on with infertility. This amazing country of Israel actually gives its citizens subsidized IVF treatments, and as we'll get into my story, you guys will find out that I needed that. I knew that I needed that before I ever tried actually conceiving, and so it seemed like a really logical choice to leave California and Los Angeles, where I'd lived most of my life, and come here so that I would have an opportunity to have a family.
So how did you first, like at what point did you start thinking about having a family?
Honestly, I was on this career path my entire 20s. I used to work in the music industry, and I was very much all about being an executive. And then a few months shy of my 30th birthday, I was diagnosed with cervical cancer. And though I was like the easy cancer, I didn't need chemo or anything like that. And nobody talked to me about fertility at the time because they, again, the easy cancer. I started thinking about, okay, I was told by one of the doctors that there's an 80% chance that I would get this cancer again, and that if I had had children, that he would recommend a hysterectomy. I mean, he was very aggressive with his course of treatment. I would have never actually needed to do that, but it made me really scared that I wouldn't be able to have a choice to have kids. And so that's when I really started looking into what my options were. I actually went to HRC Fertility in Encino, which is like the number 2 ranked fertility clinic in the US, and had a very nice, but now looking back, really stupid RE tell me that I was still young and it was, again, the easy cancer and I'd meet somebody and I didn't have to worry about that stuff. So we never took any tests and we never did anything. And I just, you know, I felt the clock ticking and more pressure for me and my family, but it wasn't something that I was aware that I really needed physically to deal with until a few years later when I found myself in the corner of the floor, unable to walk and in pain for days at a time, and turned out that I had stage 4 endometriosis, had a huge endometrioma on my left ovary. I was still single at that point. They had to remove it. My left ovary no longer worked. And I had to start thinking about freezing my eggs again. And so I went abroad for it to Israel because we had a family friend that's an RE and she was going to take good care of me. And so, and it cost, the cost was cheaper even to do it privately at that time. And so I came here and did that, but had a really bad experience because the endometriosis was just, I didn't wait long enough. I literally waited 3 months and started my IVF cycle and my body was just not ready for it.
Yeah. So, and what age was that for you?
I was 35. Okay. 35 when I tried to freeze my eggs. Yeah.
Okay. So at that point you were thinking more towards preservation, not like, did you consider getting pregnant at that time at all?
No, because it, again, like nobody told me how bad it was until I actually went through the egg freezing. Everybody was just like, again, you're 35, your eggs are just now starting to decline. You'll be fine. In stimulation, I had 8 follicles and I only got 2 eggs out of them. And we froze the 2 eggs. And if anybody knows anything about egg freezing, 80% thaw. And so, you know, I could walk away with nothing from that entire cycle. Right. And so that's when I was like, okay, I got really sick from it. It took me about 6 months to recover. In those 6 months, I actually moved to Israel permanently and just felt weird to be apart from my eggs. And also just thought I would have an easier time still finding somebody. So I paid for 2 egg freezing cycles. I was going to do a second egg freezing cycle and try to meet somebody in the meantime to hopefully have that family with, but I was still thinking preservation at that point.
Mm-hmm. That's where I started as well. I was 36, I think, when I first started, just wanted to freeze some eggs. And then it was a similar journey of it didn't go very well. And so then I was faced with the, okay, now what? And also similar, I had an RE who just did not do a good job of helping me figure out what to do next. So you've said a couple times you weren't getting the information that you needed. Like, what do you wish that someone would have told you during this time?
I wish that somebody would have just told me, get the tests, get the tests done, get an AMH. Even if I had at that point, when I was still 30 years old, when I went into the RE and they told me that I'd be okay, if he had just done an ultrasound, he would have seen the endometrioma growing already. It's not something that really grows overnight. My endometrioma was over 7 centimeters. Like it took a while to get there. And I remember having pain. I just never paid that much attention to it because you're busy with life doing other things and people tell you that pain is normal. And so you just deal with it. And we all talk about Wanda, right? In this community, if they just stuck Wanda up there, that would have changed a lot of things for me. And I would have learned a lot about like also preserving those eggs before they did the surgery on the endometriosis. I could have still gotten eggs from that left ovary where now I can't. The path would have just been a little bit different, even though I do think that I would still be here in the exact same point that I'm in, because that's just the journey I had to take.
Right. And will you tell us a little bit more, like take us from the egg freezing to kind of where you are now?
Sure. So I took a while to go back to egg freezing because I was really sick. So it got adrenaline fatigue after the egg freezing cycle that I did. First, I was in the hospital for 6 days afterwards with an infection. And then I just got sick all the time. If I worked out, I was sick. So I couldn't really stay healthy. It took me about 6 months to get out of that. Then 6 months to kind of acclimate myself to living in a new country. And then I started taking the tests again. So if you wait more than a year between cycles, you have to take tests. And this time I took the first time because it was voluntary. I didn't have to do an AMH test when you're freezing your eggs. So that's optional. And that's another thing I wish that I would have done earlier, taken that test. And also most insurance companies don't actually cover it, which is another reason why I didn't take it. Mm-hmm. So this time I did take an AMH test as I was getting ready for my second freeze cycle, and it came back really low at 0.78, which makes sense because, again, one ovary. The RE recommended that I don't freeze eggs, that I freeze embryos, because there's more research around it and they know that embryos are more likely to survive in a thawing process than the eggs. And a month before, I had met somebody that I was actually really getting along with, and we liked each other and we talked about family and we had a very similar view of what we wanted in our life. And I was going to dump him and just go and get a sperm donor and go and make my embryos and perhaps even try to get pregnant at that point in time, because I was already eligible for the IVF from the country. But everybody around me was like, just talk to him. Maybe he's down, you know? And it turned out he was. And 3 weeks later, we were in our first IVF cycle together, which went okay. We had a fresh transfer, but a BFN. And then second one was a little worse than that. It took a while for us to figure out what the right protocols were, what medication worked for me, and we went through 5 cycles together.
Okay, I'm so curious about this. So this is a guy you said you had just met, you'd been dating for a month or so, and then like how early in the relationship are you bringing up not just trying to get pregnant, but like trying to get pregnant through IVF? Like that's kind of a big deal.
So I like to sprinkle things in along the way. I think probably 2 weeks into the relationship, I was already telling him that I had frozen my eggs before and that I had another round coming up and that I was taking tests and doing all of these different things. He knew about my doctor's appointment, so he knew about those things. And so I think it kind of prepared him for me to have a conversation of like, hey, I got bad news. And I quoted my doctor, which was like, this is the time. And if it doesn't happen now, it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So these are things that you need to consider. And I was like, look, I like you. And I think that we have lots of things in common and that we have a similar temperament and a similar view of how we would like a family. If I didn't think that there was an opportunity here for us to really be a good couple together and start this family, I would just go. But I think that there can be something here. And so what do you think? I was prepared for him to run away because in America, they would.
Right.
Like in the US, I've been in 3-year relationships and you bring up kids and they're like, whoa, I don't know, you know? And so I was ready for him to do that, but he came back the next day and we kept talking about it and he wouldn't commit, but he would take the tests and he did all the like sperm analysis and all the blood work that he needed. And literally the day before I was like, dude, I have to start tomorrow. My period mm-hmm. is going to come tomorrow. Like, are you in? Because we have to go sign papers and like do all this stuff at the clinic. And he was like, okay, I'm in. I'm like, all right, great. So
that's wow. Okay, so you guys went through 5 rounds. That's a lot.
Yeah, we did 2 short protocols, 2 long protocols, and then a flare protocol. And it was really tough. It was trying to navigate IVF, which is exhausting mm-hmm. and emotional and just like something that before IVF, I'd never even known how to deal with real grief or failure. Mm-hmm. And that was really hard for me. And then you're also trying to figure out this brand new person that you don't know how they react. I think like you don't even really know your partner that you've probably been with for years until you deal with something like this. You know,
right.
They say like, you don't know who you're with until you deal with like, it's trauma. And, right. Trying to navigate and figure out our relationship and our dynamic and like how we show up in those types of situations while trying to figure out who we are ourselves, let alone our partner, was really, really difficult. And we took time apart a couple of times. I actually broke up with him before the 5th cycle because I was just like, I can't. He put a lot of pressure on it. And there was always kind of a, which I agreed to in the beginning, the whole like, okay, this relationship, like it's not going to work if we don't have the kids. He really, really wanted kids. That was very important to him. Obviously, I wanted it too. We were going towards the same goal, but like he also had a ticking clock, which I never met in a man. And so that was new to me. And so like he really like wanted it now. There was kind of pressure on every single cycle. Like, hey, if this doesn't work, this might be our last one together and I might have to go. That didn't really sit well with me. And so I was like, you can go before we start the cycle. And then he came back. He promised that things would be different and they weren't. And so then we broke up after the 5th cycle was our first time where we didn't have anything to transfer back. I changed to a new RE. They were more experimental. And so I only did 5 days of stimulation. And so even though I had 6 follicles, only 2 of the eggs were mature and we didn't get any embryos past day 2. So he lost hope. He like literally told me that he didn't think I was going to be able to get pregnant and that he needed to move forward. And I was like, okay.
Wow. Gosh, that must have been such a tough blow. I think so many of us in this community are grieving not having a partner, you know, going through all of this without the partner that we always imagined. And so to be in that place where you had the partner and you were trying for the baby and then to hit a point where it seems like neither one is going to happen for you. I just have so much compassion for you in that space because that must have been really, really hard. So how did you cope? Like what were some of the things that got you through that?
So I never believed that I couldn't. I always continued to believe, like, no matter what he said, I have a lot of anger about that, but no matter mm-hmm. what he said, I always believed that with the right protocol, with the right stuff, I was going to figure this out. Like, I am a problem solver in my life. There is no problem, including this one, that I wasn't going to figure out. Like, I've had Excel sheets with all sorts of formulas of what works and what doesn't work. And then in the end, I found an RE that listened to my protocol that I wanted. And that's what I got. And you know, obviously we'll get to that, but it got to a good result. But in coping with it, you know, in the end, he wasn't the right partner for that journey anyway. I was willing to sacrifice so much to have this family, that ideal family that's in your head. I moved to an entire new country. I completely uprooted my life so I could have this. And so dating a man that I wasn't in love with him when we started. I did love him because I thought he was so brave for going through this with me and for sticking through and, you know, things that he did along the way. But I never looked at it as I'm losing him. It was more of like I'm losing this dream of a family.
Right.
The mom and the kids and the dad and the family together and the dinners and like this whole thing that I'd imagined and had a vision board for the last 10 years. I'm not going to have that. And I needed to grieve that. That was what I was grieving. That grief was so big that I didn't have room for him. I didn't have room to grieve the relationship or to feel heartbroken because the comparison of the pain, there's nothing to compare. Like the pain of not having a family the way that I wanted, that was so much bigger.
Right. Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. I think it's amazing how powerful our thoughts are. And I love how when I asked you, how did you cope? You immediately snapped back with, well, I wasn't worried that it wasn't going to work, you know? And that's so powerful because it's so, when you have that type of faith, really it's a practice to keep your thoughts in a place of positivity and belief and okay, what's next? What's next? That didn't work. So what else can I try? And then I think just like being realistic with our own self. I've had moments where I've really wallowed in, you know, my ex-husband who left me because he didn't want children, who now has a child. Like I can really kind of spin out on that. But then when I get real with myself, I think, do I want to be with him and have his child? Absolutely not. You know, when I look back at any of the relationships that I can kind of grieve and get bent out of shape about how it didn't work out, the real answer is I don't want to be in any of those, you know? So I think that it's really important to be able to be real with yourself that like, it wasn't him, it was the dream of the family. And you can grieve that separately. Like it doesn't have to be about him. It's about the setting, I guess, or the circumstances.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. For me, you know, obviously living in a place where I don't have all my friends and all of those things, he did become this person that I confided in. We lived together, saw him every day. I talked to him. So I missed the companionship. But when I look at, you know, what kind of partner do I want to be with as far as that emotional support, he was never able to be the person that I wanted him to be. And there was nothing that I could do about that to change him. So he's not a bad guy. And I completely understand him for and the decisions that he make. I don't like the way he did it, you know, but I completely understand him because I've left men in the past that I loved that were not ready for the family. And I chose to go. Obviously, this is different because we were trying. There has to be a belief there. And if you don't believe in me, then you know, fuck you, really. So
right.
to me, I could see like how the stress of our relationship, those things really affected every round and the 2-week wait and just the way that I would obsess about all the numbers and all the things because it was so heavy. There's grieving the failed cycle, the fact that you didn't get all the eggs that you wanted or the embryo fertilization rate. Like there's so many things in the process that you have to deal with emotionally. And so getting to where I wanted to go, I couldn't if I'm just like constantly obsessing about it because it means that I'm going to lose my relationship. I'm going to lose my family. I'm going to lose all of these things. It's like, it's too heavy. It's too heavy where when you're on your own, like, okay, I know what I'm going to do next. I'm going to continue. I'm going to try again with the cycle that I did by myself. That's really what was the biggest factor for me was the fact that I could look back and say, it's okay. If this doesn't turn out, it's okay. There's no heaviness. There's nothing else for me to lose other than, okay, maybe not having a child, but that never has ever, ever, ever been a question for me, whether that will happen.
Right. I definitely relate to when I was going through egg retrievals and that excruciating wait where you're waiting to find out how many fertilize and then how many make it to a certain day and then how many, all that waiting. I was very thankful that I didn't have a partner. Of course, the ideal would be I'm with someone who I've been with for a decade and he really knows me and loves me and is supporting me. But the reality was if I had been with someone like you, it would have been someone who I hadn't known for very long and someone who really his purpose in my life would be to be that partner through having kids because I was there. I was ready to have kids. And the fact that I didn't have someone in the picture in some ways is really a blessing because that was hard and I was able to process that my way without having to also worry about managing someone else's response to it. So I definitely get that.
Yeah, it's so big, especially when it's our bodies that are doing this. And so You feel like you're disappointing somebody else. You have to carry that burden with every bad news that you get. And now you have to share it and you're worried about how they're going to react. There's just all of this emotional, like, psychobabble that's happening in your head that you don't need when you're going through this process, to be honest.
Right. And I think this might be around the time. So I reached out to you because you posted on Instagram about the difference between going through fertility treatment with a partner versus on your own. So I guess that's kind of a spoiler alert because I don't know that we've really said you continue to go through treatment on your own. Yes. But will you kind of walk us through that next part of the story?
Yeah. So I did wait. I grieved. I didn't wait that long though, compared to, I guess, a lot of the women that I've talked to who have been in relationships who then try again. I only waited 6 weeks. So I told myself in the beginning, I was crying every single day. And I told myself, if you can stop crying for a week, you can go see your new RE and get a new protocol. So when that happened, I went, I got my new protocol. I also got on antidepressants. I felt like I didn't have time to take the next 6 months out of my life to grieve what was happening because that would take 6 months out of my fertility window. Mm-hmm. And so I went on antidepressants, a very low dose, just to help me get rid of that pit in my stomach of what's going to happen. And I went with a long protocol again. I only took Menopur, which was the thing that I've always felt the best on. It was really like my best cycle ever. I was so calm throughout the entire thing. I didn't even track half the time, which is not normal for me. And we'll talk about that when it comes to the app and why it all started. But I didn't track every single thing. I didn't obsessively look at things. It was just like, okay, everything's going as it should be. It was my usual amount of follicles. I had 9 follicles. I just never know how many of them are going to actually be mature. My picking a sperm donor was like so easy. I only had 44 options. I live in a really small country, so it wasn't that many options. But when I saw the person, like I knew it was him. And even when the consultant at the sperm bank tried to get me to choose another guy, I was like, no, this is it. It just seemed lighter. It all seemed a lot lighter because there was, again, no longer that emotional burden, the things of what's going to happen to those relationships. And I just went with it. I got the most mature, all 9 were mature, all of my eggs, which was the first time that's ever happened. 77% fertilization rate of all, like 7 of the eggs fertilized, which is the highest I've ever had. And we had on day 3, 4 embryos, which is also the highest I've ever had. And they were the highest graded. So first time I ever had like 8 cells on day 3. So usually you want somewhere between 6 and 10. Normally I have 6 cells. This one, these were 8 and we decided to put 3 back.
So you did not do PGS testing?
No, because in the past I've had a really hard time getting to day 5. So okay. We've always done fresh transfers just to give it a chance because also one of the stipulations of the government continuing to sponsor your IVF is that you actually have embryos to return. So I couldn't not have embryos 2 cycles in a row since the 5th cycle, I didn't have any or that would stop. So we were like, put it in. So we put a 3 in.
Okay. So you had 4, put 3 in.
Yeah. So we put 3 in. The 4th one didn't make it to day 5. So I didn't have any to freeze. 2 weeks later, I was pregnant.
That's amazing. And is it a single?
It is a single pregnancy.
Okay. Yes. Do we have triplets?
No. And I mean, we knew that because of my history, obviously doing 6 cycles plus a egg cycle. So that's really 7 in total that I wasn't going to get pregnant with the 3, that the likelihood wasn't going to be very high that all 3 would get to day 5.
So how far along are you in your pregnancy?
I am 16 weeks today.
Wow, congratulations. And are you finding out the sex? Have you found out already? Is that something you're
doing? I found out last week. I keep saying we, I don't know why, but I am having a boy, which I'm very happy about. I've always thought that it was going to be a boy. There was never a question in my mind. And so when we were doing the scan and I was like, the very first thing, I was like, oh, it's a boy. And he was like, no, we don't do that till the end. And I was like, I see, it's a boy. And then at the end, he was like, so what do you think you're having? And I'm like, it's a boy. And he's like, yeah, you're right. I'm like, okay, thanks.
That's awesome. You've gotten good at reading those scans, huh?
Oh, yeah. I've studied many of them.
And are you happy with the medical care that you're getting there? I know part of your reason for moving to Israel was the fertility clinic. Are you still with your fertility clinic or have you moved?
No, so I've graduated from there. Actually, like he offered me to be with me the entire pregnancy, but he's private, so he's not a part of the system. And so to get tests and things done, I would have had to see a doctor that's under my insurance company anyway. But I got referred to, I'm a high risk pregnancy for multiple reasons, all the health stuff that we've talked about before. And so I have to be seen by a high risk OB and he has to take care of me for the rest of the pregnancy. So I did meet that high risk OB last week and it was really good. And I'm going to see him every 3 weeks. We already know that I'm being induced 3 weeks early, so we've already planned that out, which kind of helps because now I'm like, all right, I have my countdown to my date. Sometimes you don't know when they're going to come, if it's early, if it's late, and now I know my date. So unless he decides to come earlier than that, which I hope not, we have a plan now.
Yes, that's great. So important to have a doctor that you connect with and feel comfortable with, and it sounds like you're in a really good spot there. So I'm happy for you. And what about the rest of your support system? Do you have family in Israel or who's helping you through this?
So I do have lots of family here. My younger brother, who was living in LA when I got pregnant, then Corona started, he decided to come and be here. He bought his ticket like the day I told him I was pregnant to come and be with me, especially like during lockdown. You know, we still don't know what effect Corona has on pregnancy. And so somebody that could go to the store and go to get my medications and those kinds of things. He's been with me since like 6 weeks pregnant. He's decided to move here. He'll be living with us for the first year. So I'll have his support. And my parents are back and forth often because I have another older brother that's here and he has a daughter. So they'll be back and forth, but I'm really happy that my younger brother, who's like my best friend, is going to be here for that first year to help me. And then we'll see from there what happens.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's so great. I have also a lot of very supportive family members who live not in the same city, but very close. And I think we'll spend a lot of time together. And earlier you said, I don't know why I keep saying the word we. And I think that maybe that's it, that it really does feel like there's this community around the baby already. And I don't really think of myself as doing it by myself. I'm doing it without a partner, but not doing it by myself, you know? And it sounds like
you're going to make me emo, but yes, you're going to make me emotional. But yes, that's exactly what it is. I've never felt alone throughout this process. I've always known that I was going to have that support. And I considered doing it alone before I even asked my ex whether to do it together. And that was always because I knew that no matter what, there was going to be a good male figure in his life.
Right.
And that I would never go through this blindly alone or, you know, in need of help. It's beyond words how my family has supported me throughout this journey.
That's amazing. What a lucky girl and what a lucky baby. So let's go back for a minute to your former partner. So have you told him about your pregnancy and how did that go?
I told him because I was going to announce publicly in my social media. Before I did that, I wanted to tell him myself. And so I did. And initially he just had a kind of like, okay, really happy for you. You're going to be a great mother. Like, good luck. And that was it. And I was like, great. That's a good response. But then I think it sunk in and he started sending me messages all the time and like really was all up in his feelings and kind of got into, you know, we talked about earlier, I never really got to grieve me and him and I still had some anger around that. And so we'd get into arguments over text and I'm like, I don't want to talk to you anymore. Like, this is not healthy for me. Kept trying to rehash what happened and this is why I left and like justify his reasoning. And I was like, you're wrong. So and I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Right.
So,
well, just so, not relevant anymore either. I mean, you're having exactly, a baby. It's like, not his. And that was his choice.
Exactly. So. None of this was going to change. So I was like, look, I'd prefer if you don't contact me anymore. I was just trying to do the right thing and tell you, but there's nothing here for us really to talk about. And he still kept sending messages. And then he sent one with all of his regrets and how we should have fought harder for each other. And I was like, I'm sorry, but I don't fight for a man who tells me that he doesn't believe I'll ever get pregnant. And that leaves me the day after a failed cycle. Like, I don't fight for that. That's not worth fighting for. So, yeah. So men be crazy. No.
Yeah. I mean, I have compassion for both of you guys. I mean, more so you, obviously, but you know, it's hard when you make a decision and it's just not reversible and then you regret it. I mean, that's a hard place to be, but is where he's found himself. So, you know, sucks to be him. Hopefully he'll move forward and make better choices. Yeah. Sounds like you're in a really healthy place. And something that you posted a while back on Instagram was actually one of the reasons I reached out to you in the first place about the podcast, because you had written a post about the difference between going through a cycle with and without a partner. It just seemed like there were so many positives for you in going through the IVF cycle itself without a partner. And so I'm wondering, in pregnancy, how are you thinking about, do your circumstances change the way that you think about the baby, the pregnancy? What are your experiences with that?
Yeah, I'm going to get to make all the decisions by myself. I don't have to consult anybody, ask them about, you know, what should we do? If I've had an idea, which I have for most of my life, about how I'm going to raise my kids, like, I have ideas about how to develop kids, not to give them those scars in early childhood that affect the rest of their relationships. And I get to do that. I look at that as the biggest thing. Like, even when choosing a name, I didn't have to consult anybody. I've had my name. I've had my name for 18 months. I had it back when I was with the ex, but I never talked to him about it. I don't have to ask anyone, and this is just what I'm doing. And so there's a lot of major things like that outside of just a name that are important to me and how I raise my kid and religion and just traditions that we may have that I don't have to run by anyone.
Yes, definitely.
And that I don't have to compromise.
So when you think about your child in the future, like, what do you imagine telling your son about his origin story?
I'm going to be very honest from the very beginning about what happened, that mommy like really, really wanted him and she loved him before he even was here. And she did everything in her power to do that. And a really nice stranger gave her what she needed in order to have him. And that, you know, it's not easy for everybody to have a kid. Sometimes you need the help of doctors, and mommy had a really nice doctor, and that's how he came to be. I think it's really important to be honest with your kids from the very beginning and talk with them.
I'm curious, because I've had women on the show from Australia and from the UK, and we've talked about the donor selection process and all of that. Are donors in Israel, are they open ID or are they anonymous?
No. So it's anonymous, and you're allowed to facilitate for 10 families, up to 10 families. So that still means like 10 families, the country will pay for two kids, for IVF for two kids. So that could be 20 kids out there with the same donor. So it's not huge, but when we have 8 million people in this country, it's a big statistic when you compare it to like California or LA where I was living, which is 30 million people.
Right. Yeah. Well, one of the main reasons I wanted to have you on the podcast was to talk about the app that you're developing. So you have both a personal and a professional connection to these topics. And I really want to get into the app because I think it will be of much interest to a lot of the listeners. So will you tell us about what you're working on?
Yeah. So I happen to be like your type A OCD type of person going through this journey from the very beginning, even though like from my first cycle, egg freezing, they gave me instructions to write down in a notepad. And I was like, no, I'm going home and I'm creating an entire Excel sheet. Whenever my doctor would ask me like, oh, what were the results? Like, you know, they'd have to go look it up. I was like, oh, don't worry, here, I have my sheet. I had it on my phone. I showed her and she was really impressed by it. Second cycle came around, I did the same thing. And I keep looking for things online to help me. There's a lot of appointments, a lot of tests, a lot of different things that you have to have together and all of the results somewhere, but there was no tool to really help us. I would say after my, in between my third and fourth cycle, I started talking a lot about this with my RE, who is also the family friend. And she was like, we really need this. I started taking the concept of my Excel sheet and the graphs and the things that I was putting together. And I started designing. I've done web design for a really long time. And so I started designing an app for it. And it's called MB. It's fully designed. I hired the developer last week. We've started everything. In 3 months, we're really hoping to be in a beta. But it's going to be an app that help you track everything. So it's going to be a place where you can have all of your tests, your diagnosis, your lab results, your appointments, embryo reports, your egg reports, all of those things from anybody that's having treatment. So even if you're just medicated, an IUI, full-on egg freezing or IVF, you'll be able to track everything on this app. And one of the reasons why I started it and I really was thinking about it was because I was having so much trouble figuring out the right protocol for me. And so I thought, wow, wouldn't it be amazing if we had all these women from all over the world putting in their information and data here, and suddenly a doctor can look and see, okay, here's women in this age with this diagnosis, with this BMI, with this AMH, all of these different things, and this is the protocol that works most often for her.
Wow, so it's going to integrate different women's data in that way where you can kind of look at trends from woman to woman?
Wow. Yeah, so I think there's different things that work in different places because they're much more advocating for it. So in the UK, they really love autoimmune protocols and checking for that and making sure that you can carry the baby and blood and other blood things, where in the US, autoimmune is rarely ever discussed.
Right. Gosh. Okay. I love this so much more than I even thought I did. We've talked about this before, and I think my impression was that the app was really focused on tracking an individual's data, which I understand that it is, but now understanding how it's going to also integrate data from across the world, that is so amazing. And some of the things that I think are most beneficial, or what as a user, as a potential user, what would have been so beneficial to me is having a tool that would even tell me what questions I should be asking, because I'm assuming if it asks AMH level to plug in a certain number and I didn't even know what that was, that would prompt me then to go to my clinic and ask, what does this mean? What is my number? And what does that mean? And just thinking back in my own experience, I can imagine that the first clinic that was really not a good fit for me, my questions weren't well received. I didn't get a lot of support when I was wondering about things. And I think the app would have helped me to realize this is not a good fit for me, because I don't imagine that doctor would be very responsive to answering my questions. And then I think about my current doctor and she's all about it. In fact, I've shared the app with her and she's super excited about it and would have been all about helping me to understand my own data. It's just such a beautiful tool in so many different ways. And I'm just so thrilled that you're doing this.
Yes. The mission is really to help you today track and feel more in control and get the support that you need with your cycle to help you advocate for things, because you'll be able to eventually see, once we get enough data into the app, how your results are compared to women who are with your diagnosis. So we're not saying I'm going to compare you to somebody else with something completely different than you. We're right. talking about a certain parameter, and we're going to be able to tell you, like, hey, we get that every woman is this, but here's 100 women who are just like you, and here's where you stand comparative to them. And if you're seeing something, like for me, something that I didn't realize was, nobody brought up the fact that, like, my estrogen level is really high, and I'm a person with low AMH who can still get OHSS. Which is ridiculous to me, right? But it's because my estrogen was really high. And if I could see that compared to other women, my estrogen was high, I would have told them from the very beginning, hey guys, I need to take something, which is in your long protocol when you're taking Lupron or Decaptil, depending on where you're living, to keep your estrogen down. Those are things that I could have advocated for myself. And so that's the short-term goal and what the goal is for the end user right now. But the long-term is, we are kind of stuck with research in this field. There's nothing that's really progressed in the last 30 years. We're still using the same protocols. Sometimes we get new medications, but it's fairly the same. And so why not take all of these different areas where people specialize in different things and bring it together so that we can advance research, so that we can advance medication, and so that at the end, it'll take less cycles and less money. And hopefully because it takes less money, insurance companies will be able to take this on and women will be able to afford to have a family where so many are not able to do that. If I would have stayed in the US, I would have paid $200,000 for my course of treatment. Mm. In Israel, I pay $27,000. It's a huge, huge difference. It's a life-altering amount of money.
Right.
If I had that option to stay in California, I would have done it. I wouldn't have uprooted my life, but I had to because that was my only choice. And most women don't get that option. I'm very, very lucky and I'm grateful that I was a dual citizen and that the other country that I'm a citizen of gives me that option. But most women don't. And so they end up childless. And that's so sad to me.
Yeah. Wow. So, I mean, thinking about the way the app works, I'm kind of struck by how it's providing these multiple different courses that doctors may or may not have considered or may not be used to utilizing. On a big picture, it's bringing in all of these different potential courses of treatment. But on an individual level, I didn't even know there were different courses. I mean, now that I think about it, it's obvious, right? But for me, I went through one round of egg freezing and I got 7 eggs and my doctor told me 7 eggs was not good. Now I'm like, I've heard enough stories to, I would have been more excited about those 7 eggs if I had known all the different scenarios out there. But what he said was, you are a low responder to these drugs. You have lots of follicles and they didn't mature. They didn't respond. And so we could do another round of egg freezing and your results will probably be the same. And so for twice the price, you'll end up with fewer eggs than we had hoped in one round. What would you like to do? You know? And so I was like, I think I'll not do that. That doesn't sound like a financially sound decision. And so I moved into IUI from there. I was actually in a relationship which ended because we weren't ready to get pregnant. And I thought, okay, egg freezing doesn't work for me. Therefore, my only chance is to get pregnant right this minute. And no one told me, hey, you could try a different protocol. There might be a different dose of medication or a whole different protocol that would work for you. And it took a year to get to a place where a different doctor said, hey, why don't we try a different thing? And of course it worked, you know, it was way better.
You know, there's a lot of numbers out there that I realized are used as an industry standard, like the 80% fertilization rate, the 50% of those will become a blastocyst. Those things are bullshit.
Right.
Anyone that's paying attention to what's going on in our community when women are sharing, which women are sharing their protocols anyway, they're sharing their results online. It's happening already. You might as well have something that's taking this data and making use of it for that next person that comes in and needs the help. But it's, you'll see that 80% is so freaking rare. Mm-hmm. And that 50% that get to PGS normal blastocyst is so rare. It's not happening. And mm-hmm. So where are these numbers coming from? Where's the CDC getting these numbers from? Because they're not real. They're not real. And so I want to be able to show real numbers from real women and information that we put in there and be able to move this forward. And believe me, I've interviewed more than 10 REs for the app so that I can make sure I have all the right medical data. We're not a diagnostic tool, but we want to make sure that we're asking all the right questions to make sure that we get the right diagnosis in the system. Half of them love it and think this is the best thing ever. And the other half are like, no, you don't understand it. Everybody is different. And I get that. It's a biological thing that's happening and it's not going to be the same for everyone. But you can't tell me that once I get 250,000 women that are on this, that I'm not going to find some sort of anomaly here. I'm not going to find some sort of, you know, linear thing that's happening that works. And that's the goal. That's the big goal.
It's both for sure. I mean, I talk about it all the time on the podcast that you cannot rely on other people's statistics to tell you, you know, what's going to happen in your own body, because we are all so unique. And also hearing other people's stories helps. Those two things together are kind of like the point of the podcast, that we do need to hear each other's stories and experiences, whether that's choosing a donor or deciding to become a single mother, or like literally what dosage of what medication worked for us in the end. And I can just imagine all of the screenshots of your app that are going to be shared on boards where women are like, here's what I did that finally worked, you know, because it's constant on those boards. Have you tried acupuncture? Have you done this? Did you do that? And women want to know what other women are experiencing.
So last week I did a survey with a lot of the followers that I have on Instagram. 45 women answered, which is a really good amount. Statistically, if you're doing a survey, you really only need 30 to make it accurate if you're going to do a paper on it. For this purpose, I asked a bunch of questions, and one of them was, when you have a question about your protocol, when you have a question about your symptoms and your treatments, who do you go to? And I was really, really surprised that less than 30% of the women responded with their doctor and that they trust them. Most of the women answered that they are going to Google or they're asking their peers. Wow. And so this is another thing that's going to really help us empower each other, advocate for each other, and really help each other in this journey. Because obviously, if there's a huge mistrust here between the clinics and the doctors and the women who are getting the treatments, and we need to figure out why, and we need to fix that.
There is such a range with medical care and the doctors and the way they approach things and how they communicate and all of that. And I think of your app as like a little buddy that can like go with you. It's like your teammate that goes with you regardless of whether you change doctors or clinics or protocols or whatever. The app is the thing that is consistent and will carry all of your past experience along with you. And I love that because it's, you know, it is jarring, I think, to change clinics. And a lot of women resist because they're like, oh, it's going to cost time. It's going to cost money. I'm going to have to redo tests I've done before. And so to be able to take what you learned in the form of the app with you on that journey, I think is really useful.
Yeah, I can tell you as a person who's had 3 different REs, but has gone and met with 6 different ones for my own cycles, talk to as many as you can, mm-hmm. especially if I was in the US and each cycle was such a financial burden to me. I would say go and meet with 3 clinics, go meet with 4 clinics, because every doctor is going to have a different opinion, first of all. Like, you can come in there with the same exact blood test results and everything else, but they're all going to have a different opinion. And then you can go back and research that and figure out what is the best for you. That's one of the things that, like you said, you did a couple of rounds with the short protocol and it didn't work. And it took you a year to figure out like something that worked. I went through 3 short protocols before I went through the 4th one, which was a long one. But that was only because I went to a specialist that dealt with endometriosis. And he said, hey, for endometriosis, we like doing long protocols. Mm-hmm. And that was the protocol that ended up working for me in the end, or at least was most successful. It still took me 3 long protocols to get to my pregnancy. And we had to add other things that we tested for along the way. We added a steroid and I have MTHFR, which we learned. And so we added the blood thinner. And so those things all helped obviously get to that final result. But talk to as many doctors as you can. And even if you don't live in a certain area where you have access to a lot of them, sometimes there's just one clinic. There's only 425 clinics in the United States. There's less than 3,000 in the entire world. That is not a lot. We don't have a lot of options, but do telecommunication, especially now with COVID. You're sitting at home. Do teleconferences with doctors and just see what they say. Mm-hmm. More education is needed here.
Yeah, I want to kind of switch gears a little bit to another way you and I are similar. We haven't necessarily had the easiest road, and we have chosen to take what we've been through and make it something that can help other people, right? And so for me, it's the podcast and coaching, and for you, it's the app. And I'm just curious your thoughts about, you know, I sometimes resist when people are like, oh, everything happens for a reason. And, you know, that type of mentality. I just wanted to see, you know, what thoughts you have about the ways that you've taken the struggle and made it into something productive.
I do believe that had I been successful in my first or second round, that this app would not have been conceived.
For sure. Right?
But it came out of a huge necessity for me to figure something out that I felt like the doctors at the time were not. And it was me trying to take control back. And as I'm going through everything, it was, you know, seeing other women and being like, I know that I can help them. And I've always had it really big in my heart. Even when I went through cancer, I started writing a relationship blog, and I've written lots of articles on self-help. And I've always had this desire to help. And so I do look at this as my purpose in this journey is so that I could get all of this information, including, like, you know, I would have never had the sperm donor information had I not done this by myself, had it worked with my partner. I was supposed to give as much information as possible so I can create this app. I'm really putting my heart and my soul into it. And, you know, in the end, and I obviously wish this for you, that everything does work out. Everything will work out, and we'll get the purpose and the final end result, and everything will work out as it should. And I wish that for everybody. And I know that, you know, obviously purpose is really big for me. I have a really hard time living my life on a day-to-day basis when there isn't a clear purpose for me. And I feel like when I moved here, I stopped doing the coaching, the relationship coaching. I stopped really writing because it was just such a completely different environment for me. And I lost that part of me. This gave it back to me.
Yeah. So, I want to kind of reverse the way that a lot of people tend to look at it, where it's like, oh, maybe you went through that really hard thing so that you can make something beautiful out of it and something that helps other people. I look at women like you, and I think that it's because of who you are that you're making the really beautiful thing. It's not you had to go through this to make this thing. It's like you are I'm gonna like cry even just putting this into words, but like you are a maker of beautiful things, and like whatever the world put you through, this was going to be the result. Maybe it wouldn't have been infertility. It could have been another topic, but I think that this is why I am so incredibly proud to be a part of this community of women who are choosing to conceive on their own. Because what I see is that it's not just conceiving children. It's having that mentality of I'm going to go out and make and do and create the desires of my heart. I'm not going to just crumble when the world doesn't present it to me on a silver platter the way I thought it was supposed to look. I don't necessarily believe everything happens for a reason, or that you had to go through the infertility in order to make the thing. I just think you're going to do this because this is who you are. And I just think it's so beautiful. And that's, I mean, I could see that about you without ever knowing you and just seeing you on Instagram and the way that you kind of hold yourself in that space. And I'm just blown away with what you're doing. So I want to make sure to tell you that.
No, thank you. Thank you. I think what we're doing, what we're both doing, it's brave. It takes a lot of guts and a lot of courage to make these decisions, to try on our own, to move forward with a life without it being like that ideal, the what everybody else expected of us and what we really expected from ourselves for so long. And so the type of woman that goes for that is the type of woman that will go for anything. And it's just, it's in us. We have that. We're not afraid. There's fear along the way, obviously, but we don't let that fear take us down. We just continue. And that is what's really beautiful about this community and this process, is seeing all of these really brave women that don't let that fear keep them from having their dreams.
Yes, definitely. Well, I hope that we explain the app in a way that makes sense to people. I don't feel like I did the best job asking you the right questions to really lay it out. No. So I think the most important thing is for women to know that it's out there, that it's being created, that it's going to be available soon, right? In the next 3 months or so?
In 3 months, we will do our beta. So like 100 women can start using it. And so that we can see where, if there's bugs or things that need to be fixed, and then we'll have a wider release. So if you do want to be a part of that beta, or you just want to learn a little bit more about the app, you can go to embieapp.com.
Well, I'm so proud of you and just honored to even know you, and so excited to see what comes of this. And I think I asked you before, which one do you think is going to be born first, your app or your baby?
We're in a run. We're in a run. The baby is due in less than 5 months. And so I'm hoping that the app can also launch right alongside it, if not a little bit earlier, so that I can dedicate 100% of the time to it before I have to dedicate a lot less time.
That's amazing. There's nothing like a little pressure to get it done.
Yes. You know. Before October 20th, that's my due date currently. So before October 20th, we'll be live.
Great. Well, Ravid, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for sharing everything that you're doing. And I'm just so thankful to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me. This was amazing. Yeah. I loved our conversation.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Bye.
Thank you for joining me for this episode of the Single Greatest Choice podcast. I'm your host, Katie B. You can learn about me and this project on my website, singlegreatestchoice.com. That's also the place to go if you're interested in being a future podcast guest. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a minute to rate and review in iTunes. That helps more women to find our show. Until next time, I'm sending you all my love and support as you go about making the choices that will create a life you love.